So I'll start, I guess, before I get my gender, with an interesting medrash from Medrash Rabbah, the very first source in the sheet. Again, you know, all the sources here, I'll go through with you, follow along with me. I never take anything that I say, you know, at word. Thank you very much. Perfect. Okay, so the Medrash Rabbah, very strange medrash here, talks about the time of Mechiras Yosef, of the selling of Yosef. And what the Medrash says is that during the time of Mechiras Yosef, everybody was busy. Thank you. Appreciate it. Everybody was busy. Shvatim hayu asukim b'mechira social Yosef. The Shvatim, the tribes, were busy selling Yosef. V'Yosef haya asuk v'sako v'tanito. And Yosef was busy mourning the fact that he was being sold, that he was with his sackcloth and his fasting. Reuven haya asuk v'sako v'tanito. Reuven also felt bad that they were selling. We know the whole story of Reuven, whether he agreed, he knew what was going on. He was also mourning the fact that Yosef was being sold. V'Yaakov haya asuk v'sako v'tanito. And Yaakov was busy mourning the fact that he had lost his son. V'Yehuda haya asuk likach lo isha. And Yehuda was busy looking for a wife. V'Hakadosh Baruch Hu haya oseh borei oro shel melech ha-mashiach. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu was busy choosing the light of Mashiach, choosing the name, as the Mepharshim say, who's going to be the Mashiach. Very strange medrash. What's going on here? The first part we can understand, but you know, everybody's busy doing stuff and either feeling bad or selling Yosef, whatever, we can understand. Yehuda's like shit updating, and Hashem's finding Mashiach. Like, what's the connection here? So the Kutzker Rebbe, 18th century Hasidic master, has a beautiful explanation of this very strange midrash. And the Kutzker Rebbe says the following. He says, it's not a historical fact here, this midrash, not teaching us some historical facts, but it's a profound metaphor. He says, Yehuda recognized everybody else. Let's put that thought for the side for a second. Everyone else was feeling so bad about what happened that this, you know, Yosef was sold. And they were either they were in the middle of doing this chait, or they were feeling bad about it, and just feeling bad about what happened. Yehuda was the one person who recognized that in order to do real tshuva, yes, feeling bad is okay, but he needs to create change. You need to move forward. You need to take what happened and move forward with it. And Yehuda recognized this, and that's why, says the Kutzker Rebbe, that's why he's looking for a wife, because we know that's the new chapter in life. You know, the day of your wedding is like massive Yom Kippur. You know, you're starting afresh. You're starting anew. And says the Kutzker Rebbe, you're starting from the very first mitzvah, Puravu, so you could start really afresh. And Yehuda recognized that. And he says, you know, this is a terrible thing what happens, but instead of just feeling bad like everybody else, let me move forward and let me, you know, start afresh and start anew and build something new from this. And when HaKadosh Baruch Hu recognized or saw that Yehuda was the one person who recognized what real tshuva is, and that it's more than just feeling bad about what happened, but moving forward and taking active steps to do that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says this is where Mashiach is going to come from. When the whole world does tshuva, when Bnei Yisrael do tshuva, and Mashiach is going to come, he's going to come because as a result of Yehuda's model of tshuva. So it's a very beautiful idea, and what we see is from this redemption of Yehuda, that's where Mashiach comes from. So this concept of tshuva, not just linking to, you know, not just linking us to the past, but also gearing us to the future, that's something that we see in a lot of stories in Tanakh. And you know, we'll focus on some specific women's one, but I figured I can't really do this topic without talking about the very first time that we see this. We see this in so many different cases. That yes, you know, our past is important, and part of the tshuva process is vidoy, and talking about and feeling bad and harata and admitting what you've done and feeling bad about what you've done. But we know that a very important state of tshuva is also kabbalah l'atid, you know, the future. We have to now look to the future and grow from it. And I think the most compelling example of this is the very beginning, one of the very first stories in Tanakh, which is the story of Cain and Hevel. And in source number 2, I have Perek Dalet, which is a sin. Everybody's familiar with this story. But I think that there's a part of the story that kind of gets lost in the famous part of the story. And the story, of course, we're familiar with is the story of Cain and Hevel, where Hevel brings a korban to Hashem. It's accepted. Cain's is not accepted. And then Cain, out of jealousy, gets up and kills Hevel, his brother. And it's the second sin of, you know, of Tanakh after Adam and Chava. And it's a terrible story. And if you look inside, let's look at what happened here. And, you know, we'll see this message coming out. Again, this is the very beginning of mankind. So So what happens? They both brought a carbon. I'm beginning here in the middle of the story. Hashem didn't accept Cain's carbon as he accepted Hevel's in the previous pasuk. And what happened? What was Cain's response? Cain got very angry, and his face fell. So what's interesting is, you know, there are definitely two different emotions here. And the Mepharshim pick up on that. You know, there's anger and there's depression. You know, face falling is not the anger. Face falling is being upset, sad, depressed, whatever. So if you look at the Sfarna, we'll come back to the Peshat in a minute, but if you look at the Sfarna says it so beautifully. Actually, let's look at the Pasuk first, then we'll go to Sfarna. So Hashem's response is to Cain in the next Pasuk, in Pasuk Vav, Vayomer Hashem al Cain, Lama chara lecha, v'lama naflu panecha. Hashem's response to Cain is, I see that there are two emotions here. I see you're angry, I see you're sad, I see you're depressed. Why? Why are you angry and why are you sad? The truth is, we're not really going to go back to the Peshat, but Hashem then goes on. This is the part of the story that I think most people don't look so much into, and this is the most important part of the story. Everyone knows the final part, which is that Cain got up and killed his brother. But you don't really fully appreciate that until you understand how tragic it was that he didn't even listen to Hashem's, you know, uplifting speech, because we have to Hashem says that. Again, we're not going through this specifically, but Hashem continues, and he gives him this whole, you know, inspiring speech about Haloim Tetiv Se'et V'Imlo Tetiv L'Petach Hatat Roveit V'Elecha Teshugato V'Atat Timshalbo. It's a very powerful speech of Hashem, and just there are a lot of different interpretations, a lot of Mepharshim on it, but, you know, just from a very pshat level, Hashem says, listen, you know, if you do good, it will lift you up, and if not, you know, your sin will hover over you. You know, there are a lot of different interpretations of that, but you do have a desire to sin, V'Elecha Teshugato. But the last three words are the most important, the atatim shalbo. In other words, Hashem's telling him, I know your nature, because I created you. You're only the second person, you know, well, Adam and Chava, and then comes Cain and Hevel. And I know that you have a taiva to sin, and I know you have a yetzer hara, and I know what's in your nature, but I also know about atatim shalbo. I also know that you can overcome it. So it's a very powerful speech. So going back to Sefarno, in source number three, when Hashem says to Cain, why are you angry and why are you upset? So Sfarno picks up on that, you know, picking up on the fact that Hashem picked up on the fact that there are two different emotions here. And he says, Lama charalacha, very beautiful. V'lama kaneta be'achicha. He says, why are you angry? Why are you jealous of your brother? Clearly you're angry. Who's he angry at? He's angry at his brother. He says, Kedo'eg al shekibalti karbano baratzon. Are you upset that I took his karban? I accepted his karban? Hine lo yaze ratzon pashut or shelo kedin. It wasn't just stam. It wasn't like ini mini minimo. It wasn't even that I favored him. It wasn't lo kedin. It wasn't an irrational decision. In other words, the first message that Hashem is saying to Cain is, this is displaced anger. I'm right here. Right? Good psychological term. Right? It's displaced anger. Really, you should be angry at yourself. Right? Really, you did something, and again, you know, it's not an easy story. He was trying to do a nice thing, but maybe he didn't give it a nice way. Rashi points out he didn't give a carbon that was a nice carbon, you know, like Hevel did. You want to give something, give it of yourself, put yourself into it, and he didn't do it that way. So Hashem is teaching him, what I find so fascinating about this story is that Hashem's not angry at Cain at all until afterwards, right? He's not upset at Cain at all. He's not angry that he didn't bring a good carbon. He just says, it's a learning experience. He says to him, I want to teach you a way to do this properly. So your initial reaction is anger. That's displaced here. Look at yourself. And again, this is, you know, I think we could all relate to this. We do this, you know. Your friend does better than you. Well, that's not this bad. You don't worry about tests. But whatever, somebody else succeeds or someone else gets a job or whatever. And instead of looking at yourself and saying, what can I have done better? You get upset at the person who got it instead. It's not their fault. But it's much easier to blame someone else than to look inside and self-evaluate. So that's what Hashem is teaching Cain. Don't be angry. Don't externalize that anger. Right? And then he continues, V'lama naflu panecha. He says, Ki kiyesh l'kilkul. Why are you so depressed? Ki sheyesh l'kilkul ezo takana. Ein ra'ui l'hitsa'er ma she'avar. Aval ra'ui l'hishtadel l'hasig tikun la'atid. When you're trying to fix something, right, something that's went wrong, it's not ra'ui, it's not appropriate, it's not enough, it's not good to feel bad about what happened in the past or not enough. Okay, feeling bad for a few minutes is fine, or a few seconds, or even longer is okay. But ra'ui lihishtadel lahasig tikun la'atid. But do something for the future. Don't wallow in self-pity. Don't just be in that state of vayiplu'apanecha, you know, where you're like falling on your face and you're wallowing and feeling sorry for yourself, because that gets you nowhere. Okay? So it's a beautiful speech that Hashem is giving him. He's saying to him, basically, I understand, and that's, then he goes on to the pasuk, the next pasuk, which is, look, I know that this is your nature, I created you, I know we get angry, we externalize, it's hard to self-evaluate, you know, we like to, you know, curl up in our beds and feel sorry for ourselves and wallow in self-pity. We do that, but don't. In other words, I'm teaching you, so instead of just being upset and angry, so pick yourself up and move forward. Maybe bring me a karban that you're giving of yourself. Do it in a little bit of a nicer way. Learn from the experience. And that's what you should be doing. And again, the powerful part of Hashem's speech is that, yes, I know that this is your nature, but the last three words, atatim shalva, but you can also overcome it. You can do this. And that's why I think that those psukim shed so much greater light on the story, because then the story is so much more tragic. Because then, in the next pasuk, "Vayomer Kain al Hevel Achiv Ahibitom Atzadeh Vayakam Kain al Hevel Achiv Yargehu," and Kain completely doesn't heed Hashem's, you know, inspiring message here, and he gets up and he kills his brother, and he can't get past it, and that's why it's such a tragic story, and that's why also, as a side point, you know, "Vayomer Kain al Hevel Achiv," all the Mefarshim ask, like, you know, we don't know what they said. He says something to his brother out in the field, and then he kills him. There's no conversation here that's recorded, and the answer is, according to most of the Mefarshim, it's irrelevant, right? In other words, he was clearly upset, he was picking a fight, who cares, it always like that, you know, how did it start? It doesn't matter how it started. You were looking to pick a fight, you were angry already, and, you know, it's irrelevant what they were talking about. It has nothing to do with the fact that he got up and killed his brother. So I think this concept, you know, this idea of, you know, that our existence can't only lie in the past, but it has to be concretized in the present. And become a bridge to the future. And that's Hashem's message at the very beginning of Bereshit, of Sefer Bereshit. So what I'd like to do, that was our introduction, don't worry. We'll stay within the time. But just go through a few models of, you know, since this is women in Tanakh and Talmud, so we'll focus on the women because, I was going to say I think, but I think you see through a lot of Mefarshim also, women were very good at this. And I know this is a usually, you know, do women's only in the past. There are a few men here. Anything that I say, there's a disclaimer here. The nice things we say about women, it's not excluding men. But, well, women are kind of great. So nobody has to feel bad. But anyway, I think that if you look at certain models in Tanakh, the women were the ones who were really able to incorporate this concept. And this is, you know, and through their actions, we see this is what they were able to do. So the first model that we'll bring, and again, each one of these, you know, the model of Sarah, the model of Rivka, the women of Mitzrayim, you know, each one of these can be like an independent shir, you know, even when I was thinking about what I wanted to do, because there's a topic, you know, this, I figured I would just, instead of focusing on one specific woman, we would kind of do a broader perspective. But just know, each one, obviously these are stories that we're all familiar with, but each one, you know, has a lot of analysis that could be looked into and learned also. Anyway, so the first model is Sarah, who clearly was, you know, it has proved that this is something that she could do. The idea, again, of looking past the present or beneath the present, or let's say taking the present and looking to the future and not just getting stuck in the present. So we know from Sarah, and this is source number 4 here, one of the most difficult stories, or a lot of difficult stories surrounding Avram and Sarah. We know that this, and they're a great model to look at because they were such a partnership. Avram and Sarah, you know, I always tell my students that, you know, a lot of the sins of Bereshit have to do with the relation between men and women and how women were supposed to come. I think I gave this suggestion to Risha once. Everything comes back to Ezer Kenegdo, that Hashem's ideal was that women should be an Ezer Kenegdo for men, and that's not exactly what happened through the subsequent stories. And Avram and Sarah, I think, is the first example of this relationship that worked in the ideal way that Hashem had expected or wanted. Fulfilled the whole creation of the whole Ezer Kenegdo relationship at the beginning of Bereshit. So we know that there's this, you know, there's this relationship and a partnership, and we see from the very beginning when it talks about how Abraham, it says that the nefesh yarshu b'Charan, and they left Charan and they took the people with them, and Rashi right away points out, you know, that they were a kurov couple, all right, and a very inspiring kurov couple, and Abraham was megayar the men and Sarah was megayar the women, and they work together. And also just, you know, in terms of background of their relationship, you know, if I was doing something just on Sarah, it's very interesting how, when, if you look inside, again, don't take my word for it, but look inside, when Sarah's name is changed, Everybody, this is a side point, but just to give us an example of a relationship, when Sarah's name is changed, Sarah's the only person that doesn't get her name changed directly. That Hashem tells Abraham that Sarah's name is changed. And not only doesn't Hashem tell Sarah directly, but the way that it's changed, this isn't on the sheet, this is just a side point, the way that it's changed is interesting. That most everybody else, when their names get changed, Hashem says, okay, your name won't be this anymore, but rather this. Okay? That's how your name gets changed. You know, your name is not Yaakov anymore, Ki'im Yisrael, I'm calling you Yisrael. With Sarah, Hashem says to Abraham, he says, your name won't be Avram anymore, it's going to be Abraham. And then the next pasuk, he says to Abraham, and Sarai won't be called Sarai anymore, because that's not her name. Ki Sarah Shma. Because Sarah's her name. It's very strange. Sarah is not her name. It has not yet been changed. Her name is Sarai. So why does he say that to Abraham, and Sarah won't be Sarai anymore, because that's not her name. Ki Sarah Shma, because Sarah's her name. It's a funny way of saying that your name is changed. When did it get changed? So the Surah Hamor points out, very interesting, the bottom of the Yosef Karo, very nice perush. And on Tanakh, on Chamish Kishavura, and says, you know, this is where we see that there's a real partnership. It's very beautiful. He says, there's a real partnership here, because as soon as Abraham's name got changed, Sarah's name was automatically changed, because it's a partnership. And that's what Hashem wanted to give over to Abraham, that when your name is being changed and I'm adding the hey to your name, so automatically Sarah's name gets changed also, because you're equal partners in all this. And that's why he says that to Avram, because maybe Avram also didn't fully understand that and fully appreciate that throughout the story. Even when Hashem said to him, you know, you're going to have a child. Big news, Avram, you're going to have a child. And he says, wait a second, I already have a child. Is something going to happen to Yishmael? I have a child already. He already had Yishmael with Hagar. And Hashem's response to him is, I know you have a child, and you know Yishmael will live and be well, right? Unfortunately, right? Sorry, and he'll have a big nation that comes from him and everything. But this child is going to come from you and Sarah. Like Sarah is your partner in this; it's not just you. And it's interesting, you know, Avram had to come to that realization. Anyway, so that's why. So we see that they're real partners here, and then we see the partnership, and we see that Sarah had that ability, like we were just talking about looking forward. And she was the partner in this partnership that needed to be able to do that. And that's where our story comes in, where, yes, so then they had this child, and Hashem made it very clear that the Mesorah, that he was going to be, that the child with Sarah was going to be the child who's going to carry on the Mesorah of Abraham, not Ishmael. Ishmael will be blessed with other things, but he's not the chosen one. And then what happens? So then Yitzchak is born, and Yitzchak's birth is very... you know, is very important, because he's now, you know, we talk about why he was called Yitzchak, and why the tzchok, obviously it's not a mocking tzchok, it's a tzchok that there's a nace, you know, that here's a 100-year-old man, a 90-year-old woman had a baby, and this baby is like living proof that everything Abraham and Sarah have been preaching all along is true, basically. So he has to stand up with pride and think about it, right? This is a miraculous birth. And everybody, and they've been preaching about Hashem and monotheism, and this is, it's what's very important in all of this, because he could walk around and say, you see, you know, my parents were right. So what happens? And that's maybe why he was called Yitzchak. Anyway, so what happened? And that's why Sarah says in Pasuk Vav, you know, Batomer Sarah tzchok asali Elokim kol hashomer Yitzchakli. It's not like she's saying, oh, everyone's going to laugh at me. Everyone will laugh at me, meaning everyone will laugh at this and laugh because Azimalei tzchok pinu. You know, that Azimalei Hashem tzchok pinu. It'll be the laughter of Hashem that there's a recognition of Hashem. And that's why Yitzchak is so important. So what happens? And then the story continues. And what does Sarah see? Vatera Sarah et ben Hagar Hamitzri, et ben Hagar Hamitzri, Hamitzri, asher yaldal Abraham mitzachek. And what Sarah sees is that Yishmael is now laughing. And what is he laughing at? And of course, all the Mepharshim talk about, you know, it's not a coincidence, the same word tzchok is used. There's two types of tzchok. Again, one is the yitzchak, I see that there's a nes of Hashem, and one is the tzchok, the mocking tzchok, that you're laughing, you're mocking. And that's what Yishmael was doing. And Yishmael was laughing. And instead of, you know, looking at it and saying, wow, look at this big nes and this proof of everything that they've been saying, Yishmael is mocking it and saying, this is absurd. 90-year-old woman having a baby, walking around with a baby, it's so silly. You know, you should be laughing at this. It's a joke. And of course, Sarah recognizes this, and the worst thing that can happen is that Yitzchak will be embarrassed and feel embarrassed of his you know position and of his parents, and you know he has a big mission. And if that happens, then the whole future is threatened. If Yitzchak goes off the derech and he doesn't embrace his mission with pride, So Sarah recognizes that something has to be done. But Tomer l'Avraham, and again, it's a famous story, Garesh ha-ma-azot, ve'et b'nat, ki lo yirash ben ha-ma-azot, im b'ni im Yitzchak. And she's very strong. And she says to Avram, you got to get them out. You have to kick them out of the house. And we're not talking about some woman. We're talking about Sarah, who's always welcoming people into her home. Yes, she had a gvura personality, but that's part of the gvura personality. She's able to say, this is a problem. And yes, it goes against my grain, and it goes against my nature. Sarah was giving and always, you know, accepting people into her home. And to kick them out, yes, she had her past, her history with Hagar, but that's another story. You know, the Farshim will point out, this was not personal. Why? Because he has Hashem's Haskama. You'll see, you know, there, she was wrong. And the Ramban says, you know, the first time she oppressed Hagar and Hagar ran away, Sarah was punished for that. Ramban says very powerfully and very prophetically, maybe that's why we have problems with Yishmael's children, because of Sarah, because of that story. And Avram also for not getting involved, but that's a different story. Anyway, so what happens? So she says, you know, you have to go out. And what happens in Pasuk Yud Aleph, Vayera hadavar me'od be'inei Avram alo beno. And Avram again is looking at the current, at the present situation. It's his son. And Avram feels very bad, alo dopeno, about his son. He doesn't want to kick him out of the house. And what does Hashem say? Vayomer lokim al Avram, al yera be'inecha al hanar, right? Kol asher tamar elecha sara shma bekola, ki bi Yitzchak yikare lechazera. Right? Basically, listen to your wife. She knows what she's talking about. Good pasuk, right? So listen to her. Everything she says, she's right. And that's the haskam of Hashem. Clearly, it wasn't personal here, like maybe before Sarah's emotions got in the way. Here, it wasn't. It was completely selfless. It was, if anything, going against her nature and saying, this has to be done. So again, this is a perfect example of her, the recognition of her role in this relationship, that yes, while Avraham was, you know, stuck a little bit in the present and the difficulty of sending my son out, Sarah was able to say, no, I need to do this. I need to move forward. So the next model of that is the model of Rivka. And again, these are famous examples. The model of Rivka, and I see on the sheet you don't have the full source there. You just have the pasuk about Esav marrying two wives, but it continues in Chaf Zayin, which is what I'm saying. But the main bulk of the story is Parashat Zayin. The end of Chaf Vav, I just found interesting. Esav finds a wife, because again, Rivka did a very similar thing. Those of you, you know, listening now, going on, continuing on, obviously Rivka did something also very similar, which was the whole tricking of her husband to make sure that Yaakov got the bracha, not Esav, was also, you know, her ability to look forward and recognize that something needed to be done. That not just look at the present situation. Yes, in the present situation, this might not be a great thing to do, but something has to be done for the future. So what happens? I just thought it was interesting that what happens right before this whole story of Rivka recognizing the fact that she has to, you know, trick her husband, basically, Esav got married, and he married these two Kanani women, right, the Chitim, and in Pasuk Lamed Hey, Batiena Marat Ruach Li Yitzchak L'Rivka. This is our first sense, you know, even though we know that Yitzchak wanted to give a bracha to Esav, and of course, which bracha was it? It wasn't bracha for the Sorah. Only Hashem could do that. That's a little bit of a misconception. It was bracha Vayitzen Elokim Mital Hashemayim Mishmanei Haaretz. It was a physical bracha. But again, Yitzchak understood or assumed that Yaakov and Esav were going to be working together. And why was that a fair assumption? Because the reason he was chosen and not Yishmael was because they had different mothers. So it's a fair assumption on his part to say, oh, well, my two children are both the sons of Rivka, so they'll be working together. So this way, Esav, I mean, that's one way to understand it, but it really makes sense. So if Esav gets the physical bracha and Yaakov gets the spiritual bracha and they work together, we have a great Yisachar Zvulun situation here. The problem is they weren't going to be working together. And Rivka knew that, because when she was pregnant, the question is, where did the communication break down? That's a different issue. But when she was pregnant and, you know, they were fighting, and Hashem told her, you know, you have two nations here. So she knew they weren't going to be working together. Anyway, so maybe there was some sort of panic there because there was some lack of communication. Whatever happens here, she realizes something has to be done. So, but it's interesting how we see right before that story that they were upset about Esav's wives, about his choice of wives. So clearly, there's also, I think that's kind of a hint here that, you know, Rivka, the reason she panicked like this and said, you know, when Yitzchak announced that he was going to give the bracha to Esav, this bracha to Esav, she said, that can't happen. Why does she think that, you know, the future won't be good for Esav? Maybe a little bit because of the wives that he's married to. He doesn't have that same partnership. If you don't have that partnership, that you know, Avram and Sarah had, that Avram was so desperate to find for Yitzchak, and that's why he sent Eliezer with very explicit instructions and an oath that he has to be the right woman, and he set up a whole, you know, 4-point character test, right, to find Rivka. But maybe this was, you know, Rivka's way of recognizing the fact that, you know, this is, it's not a good situation for Esav if he's not married to the right partners and all this. And that's why Vayihimo Ruach. Anyway, it's just interesting. So again, Rivka was the one who was able to look to the future. Rivka heard. The rest of the story, you know, Yitzchak says, go and vaseli matzamim kasher ahavti and bring me back food. And veveti le gochela ba'avor tzvarecha nafshi b'terem amud, before I die, I want to bless you. Rivka shomat b'daber, again, you don't have this inside, but it's berachav zayin, b'daber Yitzchak el Esav v'no v'yelech Esav asadel atzud zayid l'havi. Rivka heard what was going on, so while Esav was out in the field, Rivka amra al Yaakov v'na leymar, hine shamati et avicha medaber al Esav achicha leymar, havi al yitzayid, etc. v'atabini shmal asher ani mitzavei otach. Right, and she says, listen, and she says to Yitzchak, to Yaakov, listen carefully and listen to everything that I'm going to tell you. First of all, it's a very similar lashon that Hashem says to Avram. Listen to everything that Sarah's going to say. She says, she commands her son, listen to everything that I'm going to tell you right now. And that's when she says to him, I'm going to prepare food. You go. You pretend to be Esav. And again, this is a situation where it also went against her grain. I mean, we're talking about Rivka. You know, I'm sure she was an emissary person. You know, but she took command when needed. She saw a situation. She needed to rise above the present situation and move forward. And she recognized the need to do something that will save the future. And that's why she did this here. So moving along now at our next model. And by the way, it's also, you know, it's not just a coincidence that it's the women here. We know from the very beginning of creation of the world, when men and women were created, you know, everything in the beginning of Bereshit is, you know, Vayivra Elokim, he created, or Vayitzer, or he created, he molded. With women, it's Vayiven, and Vayiven et Ha'isha. And of course, all the Mepharshim there say, what's Vayiven? You know, who bana, like he's building, like why is that shorash used with, that verb used with women? And the Mepharshim very famously say that it adds the bina, that women were created with a certain amount of bina. And there's a whole discussion about what's bina versus chachma. You know, it's not just chachma wisdom, but bina is an understanding, an intuition. An intuition. You know, I always say it's interesting that in English, you don't have, again, no offense to the men here, but you don't have an expression, male intuition. Right? I never heard that, at least. It's the female intuition, right? A certain intuition, like a certain deeper understanding that you can intuit something. And that's what, you know, that's women were created with this from the beginning. So we see from Sarah, we see from Rivka, there was a certain intuition that they had that they acted on. What we see is that one of the next women that are highlighted, and there are others in between here, but, you know, I have to figure out, you know, keep it within a lot of time. I find this fascinating. We have Miriam. Miriam, as a little girl, having the same intuition. And where do we see this? At the very beginning of Shmos, Parak Bet, Vayelech Yishev Et Levi, another story that we're all familiar with, Vayikach Et Bat Levi, and the very beginning of the story of Moshe, basically. Parak Aleph, we know how Bnei Israel, the whole population explosion in Mitzrayim, how they became slaves with Bnei Israel, Pavu, Vayishutsu, etc. And then by Morat Chayim Be'avodah Kasha, Paro's Havan Yitzchak Malo, like all that happened in Parak Aleph, where Paro's coming up with a plan to you know, expose the Jew, not expose necessarily, but deal with the Jewish problem, our first, you know, real anti-Semite, or example, situation of anti-Semitism, and persecution of Jews. He's the first one to refer to them as an Am, Hinei Am B'nei Israel. And what happens? And then we have this family emerging, because of course we know that Moshe's going to come from this. And we have a man from the house of Levi, the Pasuk tells us, takes a woman from the house of Levi. And what happens? Vatar Haisha Batele Ben, Batera Tokitovu, etc. And the rest of the story, Moshe's born, right? She becomes pregnant, she gives birth, and Moshe's born 3 months early, and they hide him, and, you know, the story, Batara finds him, and the whole story, you know, unfolds. So, anyway, so all the Mepharshim ask here, and I brought Rashi, because he's the one that we're all familiar with, what do you mean by Tachet Bat Levi? You know, it's a good question. What does it mean a man from the house of Levi came and took a woman from the house of Levi? Moshe has older siblings. Like, they were married already. Avram has been born. Miriam was already born. Miriam's already older. So what do you mean a man, you know, came and married a woman from the house of Levi? So Rashi famously says, Vayikachet bat Levi, parush haya mimena. They were separated. They were divorced, basically. They had divorced each other. Why? Mipnei k'zeirat Paro. Because of Paro's decree. because when Paro went up, went and decreed and said that all the boys who were born have to be thrown, have to be drowned in the water. So they all the Jewish couples separated. They said, we don't need to bring babies into the world for this, you know? So what happens? So v'chazar v'lacha. So then, so Amram and Yocheved, and then she tells us the Ish and Beit Levi and the Bat Levi. So they were divorced like everybody else, and then they got back together. They remarried, right? V'zehu v'yelech. So why v'yelech? What do you mean v'yelech? He went and he took a wife from the house of Levi. Shehalach ve'etzat bito. He went after the advice of his. He followed the advice of his daughter, little Miriam, who was very young at the time, right? She'amralo, and she said to her parents, to her father, Gzeratchat kashem mishal paro. Your gzera is worse than paro, right? Mishal paro, in paro gazar al hascharim, v'ata gam ken al hanikevos. Because paro is looking to eliminate the boys, and with your separation, you're getting rid of the girls also. So you're even worse than paro, you're eliminating everybody. So what you see here is that even Miriam, so he realized that his young daughter was right, and then he went, the question is, why didn't his wife realize that? And then he realized it was right, and so he followed her lead, he followed her advice, and he went, and he remarried his wife, and no, Moshe was born. And if not for this, Moshe may not have been born. I mean, obviously Hashem would have had a different way of making sure that that happened. But the point is, look what came of this. So we see even here, you know, in the strongest, darkest moments of Jewish history here in the Torah, in the slavery, even here, you know, the women were able to recognize that there was something that needed to be done. We need to look beyond what's happening here in this dark moment, but we need to look to the future. And Miriam, little Miriam, recognized that the future was threatened, and that's why she did this. And then continuing on, again, similar theme. We know from the Gemara in Sota that the Gemara, you know, says, and this is very highly quoted, that Vizchar v'zchut nashim tzidkanios shayu bel toador nigalu Yisrael mimitzrayim. So we know that, you know, one of the things that we learn about Pesach time is that it was the nashim tzidkanios, it was the righteous women, it was in their zchus, it was the reward for them that we were redeemed from Mitzrayim. And again, I think this is, you know, another example of women recognizing, you know, looking to the future. And what the Gemara does, I don't even know if you have this example here, but what the Gemara does, right, I see the comma, but the continuation of the Gemara there, also that was left out, but the continuation of the Gemara describes, oh, you know, because in the Rashi, in the next source, two sources later, in the Rashi, in the Rashi and Shmod, Rashi goes through a similar description. But you should know that the Gemara and Sota describes, what do you mean? Because Bisha'an, I'm just reading from the Gemara and Sota, Bisha'asha al-Chot Lishov Mayim, HaKadosh Mizamein Lahem Dagim Ktanim, Bekadehem Beshavot Machtze Mayim Machtze Dagim. That when the women would go to draw water, Hashem would, you know, let's say from the Nile, because that's where the source of the water Mitzrayim, so Hashem would make these little fish come into their pails, so they would have half water and half fish, you know, meaning like they would be able to catch all these fish. And what would they do? And then they would go and they would prepare this fish, and they would prepare a meal, you know, they would go, they wrote achat shel chamin v'achat shel dagin, u'malichot etzel ba'aleihem l'sadeh, machnitzot otam, they would come with water and with food, and they would go to their husbands in the fields, and they would help, you know, they would wash them, and they would feed them, and they would, you know, make themselves look pretty to go meet their husbands. And what we see is, and then their husbands would be in a better mood, come home, and they would sleep together, and they would produce more children. So what we see is that, again, you know, we have an example here that in the darkest throes of slavery, where you see the men's will almost broken, you know, by the hard labor in the field, the women were able to maintain this vision, that they were able to look to the future. And they were the ones who said, you know what, we can't, not just Miriam, but all the women who said, we can't just let our husbands come home all broken and not, you know, and then not have more children, not be together, and not bring more children into the world, because then, you know, Paro has succeeded and he's triumphed, and then we have no future Jewish people. So the women recognized that this had to be done, even though for sure, you know, they probably didn't want to bring more children into the world, nor were they in the mood to like be with their husbands after, you know, during this whole persecution and bring children into this terrible situation. And what we see is that these mirrors, and again, these all go hand in hand. But we see when Bnei Israel were coming forth with donations for the Mishkan, the women then brought these mirrors that they used, you know, to make themselves pretty. And we see by Yasef's Akiyor, and these mirrors were used for the Kiyor, for the wash basin in the Mishkan. So the pasuk tells us by Yasef's Akiyor Nechoshet, Bet Kano Nechoshet, Bemarot Tzavot Asher Tzavu Petachol Moed. The Kiyor, this wash basin, was made out of bronze, of the bronze that was copper, actually not bronze, copper, and it was the copper from the mirrors that the women, you know, from the mirror, from Marot HaTzovot, from the mirrors that they used in Mitzrayim, which is understood, we'll see Rashi there, from these mirrors of the women in Mitzrayim. And if you look at the Rashi there, it's a really very excellent Rashi there. Rashi says, Marot HaTzovot, and Rashi explains, Binot Yisrael, hayu biyadam marot, shiraot bahem, kishahim mitkashtot, that they would decorate themselves with. You know, they had these mirrors that they would look in the mirror and make themselves pretty and put on their makeup and, again, you know, make themselves up. And even these, they didn't, you know, hold back from giving. You know, and of course, we know the women were the first ones to come. They have Ohan Hashim and Hanashim. They came with the donations to the Mishkan. So they brought these mirrors. And look at this. Moshe's reaction. V'haya mo'es Moshe bahen. Moshe was repulsed. Mo'es is a very strong word. He was repulsed. He didn't want to take these donations of the mirrors. He didn't want to take them as donations for the Mishkan. Why? Mipnei she'asuyim li'yetzer hara. Because you think mirrors, you don't want to use it for something kadosh. Mirrors, you know, you're supposed to cover mirrors. God, you know, God forbid if you're an avelos, you know, it's very chitzoni. You know, you use mirrors to make yourself, to look at your face and make yourself pretty. And, you know, it doesn't seem to be something that should be in the mode when you're an avelos. You know, it's something that's, you know, why would Moshe want to use that for something so kadosh like the Kelim of the Mishkan? So what happens, and I love this line, Amar le'akadosh baruch hu, Hashem said to Moshe, Kabel, you take these. You accept these, ki elu chavivin alai min hakol. Because these are more precious to me than all the other donations. That these mirrors are more precious to me than all donations. And then he continues, she'al yedeyam she'amidu hanashim lutzavot rabot, צבאות רבות במצרים כשהיו בעליהם יגיעו בעבודת פרח היו הולכות ומליחות להם מאחב ומשתה. And this is, you know, again, kind of what the Gemara was explaining, describing a little more in detail, Rashi brings. And he says, you know, they would look in these mirrors and they would make themselves all pretty, and then they would prepare food and water and drink, and they would go out to their husbands in the fields, and they would go the notzlot hamarot, and they would take their mirrors with them and make sure, you know, to fix themselves up. But kol achad ro'eh atzmam im ba'ala b'mareh, and they would use the mirrors even as a playful, you know, the way Rashi describes, you know, take the mirror and look at her, you know, just so to play with their husbands with it, like, oh, look at us in the mirror, you know, and play around, you know, very playful. And then they would be able to come back, and they would, their husbands, you know, would want to be with them, and then they would get pregnant and have more children. So again, it's the same idea, obviously, that the Gemara is saying, b'zchud nashim tzidkaniyot. But what we see here, that again, that notion that the women recognize this, and they recognize the need to move forward, that if we just, you know, let this get to us, then again, Paro has won, there'll be no future of the Jewish people, and that's why the women recognize that this has to be done selflessly. Selflessly, and that's why Kadosh Baruch Hu, again, the women probably weren't in the mood either, right? But that's why later on, when they brought these mirrors to be used for the Kiyor, Hashem said to Moshe, even though Moshe didn't understand that, he didn't necessarily recognize that, and he saw it for what it's worth, these bunch of mirrors that you look yourself, you make yourself look pretty with, that seems to be very superficial. Hashem said, no, these are not superficial. These are very dear to me, because they were used for a very specific purpose, very selfless purpose. Okay, question?
Not even a question. In going back with their husbands, they had a 50-50 chance of having male babies.
Right.
I mean, this was really Mesiras Nefesh.
Really Mesiras Nefesh, exactly. That's why I said, like, they probably didn't want to do this either, but they knew it was important, exactly. And they knew it was important. It's complete Mesiras Nefesh. And that's what brings us to the next verse, which I think is a very powerful idea also. The Me'ah Shiluach, the Ishbitzer, has a sefer, the Me'ah Shiluach. And there's a discussion there that I think fits in so beautifully about Netilas Yadayim, about washing hands. And, you know, the reason I think it fits in beautifully here is because we just finished saying that these mirrors that were clearly an act of Mesiras Nefesh and selfishness on behalf of the women were used for the Kiyor. So the question is, okay, so why the Kiyor? Right? Why the wash basin? The wash basin was very important. The Kiyor was placed right by the entrance to the Mishkan, and then later on in the Beis HaMikdash. And you know, the Kohanim and the Levim had to wash their hands, and there was a specific way to wash your hands, one, you know, the right foot and the right hand, I think, at the same time, and then the other side, and they had to wash their hands before they could do avoda. So if not for that kiyur, they couldn't come into, you know, to do the avoda. So why the kiyur? You know, why not any of the other kelim, any other vessels? So the Me'ah Shiluach talks about hand washing, and I think it so fits in so beautifully. And he says, "Barachatu yedeim v'raglehem inyanav pizza." You know, talking about this whole concept of, you know, washing your hands from the kiyur. He says, "Ki yavr pizza more alzek Moshe katuv etzal egla rufa." And he talks about how, you know, there's rechitza by egla rufa. He says, "Hu shamru she'ein lahem shum negiya v'chelik hazeh hamaseh." He says, because it's a sign. Well, first he brings the idea of egla rufa, that it's a sign that you're doing, when you wash your hands, it's a sign that you're doing it, you don't have your own negiyus. You're not doing it for selfish reasons. You're doing it for someone else. And he continues, and he says, "Vegama kohen ha'oved hutzrach l'rechitza." And this is what I underlined here: "Haynu shiyasir nigiato umevatol daato uritzono neged ritzon Hashem yitzvarach." And when the kohen does rechitza, the reason he has to wash his hands, because when he comes in to the Mishkan or the Beis Hamikdash, he has to wash his hands of all the negiyos of his own personal ego. Because you could come in feeling very good about yourself. You know, I'm a Kohen, and I'm going to be the one doing the avoda. You have to get rid of that, because otherwise the avoda is bad. You know, otherwise it's not good. Right? It has to be selfless. You have to do it because Hashem, it has to be, you know, Ritzon Hashem. You're doing avodas Hashem, and that's why you're doing it. So the rechitza is a symbolic way of washing your own negiyas away, washing your own ego away. Haynu she'eino oved, rak mash Hashem yitzvarach hafetz. And that's why it was so important that they watched this, because it was symbolic, and hopefully the act will whatever the expression, that action shaped character, that they would do this, and then it would have an effect on them. So they would do this, and this act of washing away their own negiyas, their own ego, you know, they would be able to go selflessly and do Ritzon Hashem, and then their avoda would be purer. And then he continues, and he says, "V'chein asher nitzavinu latuya deinu shacharit v'kodem suda hu gam kein kodem sheyatchil hadam lasok v'tzorchei haguf tzarich tfila l'Hashem yitzvarach ve'im sheyavo liyado davar minyanei olam hazeh shehu chas v'shal neged ritzon Hashem az hu mevakesh v'Hashem yitzvarach sheyitol v'yasir et ta'avato mizeh." So it's very beautiful. He says, and that's why we wash our hands in the morning. You know, for example, before Shacharit, because also what we're doing is we're getting up and we're saying we want to do Avodas Hashem. We want to wash our own negiyas. We want to, this day, we want to be more about God than about us, right? And that's why, you know, and especially before we go into Tefillah, we want to make sure that our thoughts are on Hashem, that it's not our own, you know, that we're doing it because it's Ratzon Hashem. And he says before Su'udah also. And it's such a good example. Before you have a Su'udah, it's very hard to wash away, you know, to not just enjoy the food. Obviously, we have, because, you know, on Shabbos, we have a Inyan of Oneg Shabbos and Basar Dag and Chol Matzamim. It's, you know, we're supposed to enjoy the meal, but you also have to do it because it's Avodas Hashem, because Hashem told you to, you know, Zachorite Hashem Al Kachel, and that's part of it, and having the Su'udah, and not just doing it for self, you know, not just doing it because, especially these late Shabbosot, we're all starving, we haven't eaten all day, and the house has smelled so great, and it's very hard to sit down at the meal and just forget that you're not just starving and the food is great and you want to sit down and enjoy it yourself. You want to make sure that there's that element of, you know, it's not just about me and it's about the avodas Hashem. So that's why you wash. Again, think about it. Next time you wash before you're doing a suda, you're doing a mitzvah, that you're washing away, you know, your own negiyas. You're doing this. Yes, Hashem wants us to enjoy, but it's Ritzon Hashem. And that's why we're doing it. So I think it's a beautiful idea. Understanding, once we understand that this is the whole point of rechitza, so how appropriate is it that it was the kiyor that was made from the mirrors of the women of the tribe? It's exactly what they did. It's exactly what they did. You know, you talked about Mesiris Nefesh. They washed away their own negiyas, their own difficulties, their own interests. And the fact that they were able to do this and give themselves wholly to Hashem and B'nai Yisrael and the future of B'nai Yisrael and what was needed, you know, according to what they thought was Ritzon Hashem. So how appropriate is it that it was those mirrors that were used for this kiyor? That that's what the kiyor accomplishes in the Mishkan. And again, you know, we see this concept that it's a perfect example of women recognizing this and removing themselves from the present situation and transcending the present or taking from the present but moving to the future and saying, what has to be done now? I can put my own stuff now aside and embrace what needs to be done for the future. And we see this concept, you know, even in the poetry of Tehillim, And the concept of, you know, strengthen my legs, like stabilize my legs, ground my legs like the legs of the ayalot, like mountain goats. But it's the female ayalot. It's not the rams, the male rams, but the female mountain goats. So why does, and we see this a few times in Tehillim where the female animal is used. And if you look at the Rashi there, Rashi says, "Meshafer raglay kal ayalot, ragleha nekevot omdot biyosher yoter mishel zecharim." That the women's, yeah, I didn't make this up, Rashi. The women's legs are biyosher gadol. It's like a little straighter, a little more stable. You know, why is Hashem, why are we comparing, you know, to mountain goats? Because if you've ever seen mountain goats, you wonder why they don't fall off, right? They're very stable. If you've ever, you know, even, you know, gone horseback riding on rocks, like, you know, they shake a little bit, you know, these mountain goats look so stable, and they're climbing these mountains, you know, so again, there's a lot of nice ideas there, but, you know, our emuna, our relationship with Hashem, should be stable and grounded, you know, despite, you know, anything rocky, any rocky situations, whatever, and it's compared to the women, to the female ones. And again, so Rashi, you know, is pointing out here that maybe the female legs are a little more grounded or straighter or firmer. You know, and again, I'm using a little bit of license here, but maybe that has to do with the fact that the women have this ability, if you're grounded and you're not just looking at the superficial, you know, situation, but you could go beneath that and look to the future, so that makes you more grounded because you're building something in the future and you're building a foundation. And you know, maybe seeing that depth of the future, you know, makes you stronger and makes you more grounded. And we see that. I mean, we see, you know, like I said, there are other examples of women like this, individual examples, but we see even women as a whole, and this is just a little bit of a side point, but even in their acceptance of Hashem, you know, their initial emuna in Hashem was certainly, you know, they were the ones who embraced Hashem first, really, and they had less difficulty than with the men. I mean, this is the whole situation with, you know, Chei HaEgel, and the women not really wanting to participate in Chei HaEgel. They didn't want to donate their gold, and that's why the men had to rip the earrings, you know, literally, Pasuk said, rip the earrings off their women's ears, because they didn't want to give donations to go, you know, of gold. And, you know, that's also, you know, they understood, looking at the situation, it's a good example of the situation at hand, was that Moshe seemed to have been gone. Moshe said he was going to be up for 40 days. They counted 40 days. All the Mepharshim and a lot of Mepharshim point out that they miscounted. It was supposed to be 40 full days up on Har Sinai. They started from the day Moshe started walking up the mountain. And that means that the first day for them was really, you know, the first day for Moshe was really their second day. So really the 39th day, they counted as the 40th day. So looking at the situation, they see Moshe's gone. He must have died. The situation at hand was that he's not here anymore. And they panicked. And they needed, you know, this physical manifestation of God or something to represent God to them. The women looked at the situation and saw it differently and said, we know he's there, he's coming. Even if we can't see him, there's got to be a future here. There's got to be something, you know, for everything that Hashem has done for us up until now. And maybe also they didn't need, you know, maybe men's, I mean, definitely men's and women's natures are different, and maybe men needed the more physical manifestation than women did. But whatever it was, they didn't partake in that, and they didn't give their gold. And that's why, again, because they were able to look beyond the present situation. And it's interesting, just as an aside, the Ramban points out there, I love this Ramban, that the Ramban says, if you notice, the women didn't want to give their gold. So he says, he asks a rhetorical question. You get very upset at the Ramban until you see his answer. And he says, well, maybe women didn't want to give their gold because we know women love jewelry. And they don't want to part with their jewelry. And you look at the Ramban, and like, you're getting all upset at the Ramban. And then he continues, and he says, but obviously it's not true, because they were the first ones to give their jewelry for the Mishkan. So it wasn't because they didn't want to give their jewelry. They didn't want to give their jewelry for the Chei HaEgel. Because they've all had nashim, imhan nashim, with donations of the Mishkan, that they came, they were the first ones, they slept their husbands along. So clearly, it wasn't because they didn't want to give their jewelry, it's because they didn't want to give it for that specific purpose. So so again, you know, this notion of the women being able to do this. And just to finish up here, the last source here, using this idea, understanding this concept, really helped me understand something. My husband actually pointed out to me, I never really fully understood, and I looked through a lot of Mepharshim and always bothered me, never fully understood something in Freshi. I mean, there's a lot of things I don't fully understand. But this always bothered me, that coming back to the beginning of Freshi, we're coming back to a full circle here now, that after, in Perek Gimel, and this is, Perek Gimel is the original sin, right? It sounds a little Christian. Adam and Chava sin. So what happens? what happens at the end of the story, we all know the story, we don't have to go through the story, and they get punished. Adam and Chava get punished. And right after they get punished, the very end of that perek, what happens? In Pasuk Chaf, in Perek Gimel, Vayikra ha'adam shem ishto Chava, kihi aita em kochai. And it tells us that Adam then called his wife Chava because she's the mother of all living things. I never understood, and I've seen different mafarshim on it, but I never fully understood until I researched this whole thing here, and you know, this whole theme. I never fully understood why, this is very strange, why is Adam naming Chava Chava? She's been a key player in the whole story. All of a sudden now she gets a name, it's true, she's been called Haisha, but all of a sudden now she's called Chava? And Adam is calling her Chava. Why didn't Hashem call her Chava? Hashem called Adam Adam, right? Why didn't Hashem talk about name change, right? Why didn't Hashem call her Chava? Why does Adam call her Chava? And why does Adam only name her after this whole thing happened? After the punishment, right? Very strange. So if you look at the Sfarno, which is really the last source, the Sfarno says five words that I think are so profound, you know, based on everything we've been saying. And I only understood the Sfarno, I think, in its entirety after doing this whole thing, right? Chava shetzricha l'chayot u'legadel habanim bechet'ah. Right? And the Sfarno says so beautifully, he's calling her Chava because she has to live. What does that mean? That she has to live and raise her children bechet'ah, in her sin, knowing what she did, having been punished. And the Gemara talks about what happened after Adam and Chava sinned. And they got kicked out of Gan Eden, which we know. And the Gemara describes how Adam sat outside Gan Eden. He lived for a very long time, 930 years old, right? For 930 years, and some say that was the first day of creation. So he lived for a very long time and did nothing. The Gemara talks about actually what he did and what he didn't do, but he was certainly in a depressed state, that he sat, like, hunched over. Well, I had a hunched over thing, but certainly depressed, sitting outside the door, the gateway, the entrance to Gan Eden, you know, feeling awful about what he did. And you can imagine, I mean, if anyone's going to fall into very deep depression, he's entitled, right? It's justified. He totally changed the nature of man and the world as we know it, or don't know it, or would have known it, and brought, you know, immortality to the world and everything like that. And really, he really messed up, okay, we know. But he certainly entered a very deep depression. So how powerful is it that at this moment when he realizes, I can't move past this. This is too big. I can't get past this. But you know who can? My wife. The woman. She's going to be the one to have to do this. And that's why at this dark moment, Adam says, she's going to have to, she's going to have to raise her children, live herself, and raise her children in her sin, knowing what she did, and pick herself up and move forward. And I think that that's what women do, right? How much selflessness. Again, men are great. We like them. They're, you know, do selfless things also. But I think this is a very big need of women. You know, we put ourselves aside. You're not allowed to be sick, right? You have to take care of everybody else. And you put yourself aside and you move forward. And thank you for coming.